and simultaneously the doctor brought us, then you can see that we'll be three forever and a you would know how agonizing being triple can be. Each one is individually the victim of the clinical day. Every summer we go away to Baden, Baden, Baden. Every winter we come back home to Walla, Walla, Walla. We do everything alike, we look alike, we dress alike, we walk alike, we talk alike, and what is more, we hate each other very much. We hate our folks, we're sick of jokes on what an art it is to tell us apart.
If one of us gets the measles,
another one gets the measles, then all of us gets the measles, and mumps, and croup. How I wish I had a gun, a widow gun. It would be fun to shoot the other two and be only one.
Linoleum knife. Fixing my mic there.
Yes.
I know that song. I've seen that clip. I forget what movie that's from.
It's from The Bandwagon.
The Bandwagon.
The triplets number.
With Fred Astaire.
And Nanette Fabre.
And
I want to say Edgar Buchanan is his name. I'm blanking at the moment, but...
If you're going to pick a song, you need to know
who's singing. I have to come in with all the history.
You need to come correct with who's singing it.
I'm sure some fan of MGM musicals.
Do you think there are any? Do you think any of them are listening?
Maybe. I don't know.
Someone out there
is yelling it at their computer.
But. Yes. This is Linoleum Knife. It is a podcast about movies.
And how.
You are Alonzo Duralde, the film critic of therap.com. WRAP.com. Yes. Therap.com.
Correct.
And also, you're on the internet in a different capacity, visually, voluptuously.
I'm a voluptuary.
On What the Flick.
Yes.
What the Flick, which is on the YouTube.
Correct. And you are...
I hear that you took those jobs because you were really fascinated by the character arc. What drew you to that role?
I really wanted to work with the director. And you are Dave White, film critic for movies.com and contributor to Slake Magazine. And
oh, yeah, I do, don't I?
And KCRW's Unfictional.
Sometimes I forget about the things I do. Like I know, obviously, I never forget about movies.com because that's my regular every week, day in, day out, you know, job. But, you know, these other side, you know, thingies that have really nothing to do with movie reviews. You know, Slake and Unfictional and
yet they serve.
And I wrote for LA Review of Books earlier this year.
Oh, that's
year
right.
Too.
You did. Yeah.
So, like, you know, I cover the whole. My arms are open wide to the world of
giving you more work.
Of, yeah. Anybody want me to write something?
Of gigs.
Where was I going to go next? Talking about me? I don't remember.
Why don't you turn off the thing?
Oh, yeah. Let's turn that off, the tape player. We don't need that right now.
It's the weekend before Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm not a Halloween person. I've never really been. Even as a kid, I liked getting candy.
I love candy.
I liked buying my Ben Cooper plastic, right. You know, totally non-flame retardant Halloween costume at Woolworths. Every
I think
year.
By the time we were kids, they were
probably flame retardant.
They were flame retardant. Yeah.
But it's
after enough children in the '50s got set on fire.
Exactly.
We were safe.
They went to too many babes in arm bonfires. I don't know. It's never been a thing that's been big for me. I'm not a big horror movie fan. I don't.
Well, that's just you being dumb.
Whatever. It's just my thing. And so Halloween is not really my holiday, so I'm just kind of, you know...
You're spinning your wheels until Christmas.
Basically, yes. Waiting for this part to be over so we can get to the real meat of the discussion.
Yeah, I know what your deal is. You start talking about Christmas, like, in October. And in not just in a, oh, wow, Christmas is coming... To live with Alonzo Duralde is, and I love Christmas. I'm not being anti-Christmas here at all. I'm a big Christmas fan. We connect very fully on this issue.
Yes.
But 2 weeks ago, we were in a store and the Christmas decorations were already up. and we were both very happy. I've actually taken people off my news feed on Facebook
for griping about
early Christmas. Yeah, like that's the quickest way to get taken off of my off of my news feed is if I hear you complaining that Christmas decorations are up in October. We're done. That's it. You better get with the program.
Yeah,
because we're not going to be friends. Yeah. But anyway, we were in the store and the Christmas decorations were up and. Out of nowhere, there wasn't even a provoked comment. I mean, it was just sort of like we were in the environment of ornaments and things. And you said, I love Christmas so much.
What can I say? It's like the rest of the year is the prelude to Christmas. And I'm an atheist, so, you know, yeah. But it's still, I love it. Like I always say, hand soaps and candles start smelling a lot better.
Jesus doesn't mind that you hate his birthday.
I observe his birthday.
Yeah. Speaking of Christmas, let's talk about a crappy horror movie that just came out this week.
Well, where I was going with this was, because you like horror movies... Mm-hmm.
I do love horror movies. And I like Halloween quite a bit,
yeah,
too.
What are your what's your Halloween take?
Candy. I love the candy. I like not going out anywhere in costume.
Right. I say we stay home. We never dress up.
Stay home. We never dress up. We watch It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
You did put on that Frankenberry costume that one year. That was pretty fun.
That was spontaneous.
Yes, because somebody else had it.
We went to our good friend Brian's house, and he's obsessed with Frankenberry, Count Chocula, and Boo Berry. One year for Christmas, or was it his birthday, we bought him a very rare item on eBay, a vintage box of Frankenberry that had Star Trek, the movie, trading cards on the back that you were supposed to cut out,
right.
But no one ever cut them out. And so, like, it dovetailed two of his biggest obsessions. Monster cereal and Star Trek.
Right.
And so when I saw that thing on eBay, I was like, gift. And it was just over at his house the other night, and it's in the kitchen up on top of the shelf. So I was very proud to see it on display. What was I talking about?
Frankenberry costume.
Yeah, well, we went to a pumpkin carving party one night there. This is 6 years ago or something
like that, yeah.
And he was dressed as Count Chocula. He had ordered a ready-made, specially made adult-sized Count Chocula costume on the internet. And he also had ordered a Frankenberry one that apparently no one would get into. Hmm. And I thought I was just going to be too fat to be in it. But he's like, go put on that Frankenberry. Like, I walk in the door and he goes, put on this Frankenberry costume. Like, apparently everyone had gotten that same command when walking in the door. And everyone else said, no. And
your game.
And I was like, all right. So I went and I put on the Frankenberry costume. I was Frankenberry.
You were?
Yeah. And it was uncomfortable as hell because it was made out of like
polystyrene
foam of some kind. Like, I was sweating. It was gross.
And the thing is,
but people could not get enough of me in that. Like, men, women were coming up and like loving on me at this.
And Halloween in Los Angeles, it's still balmy. Like, so you're
kind of,
you know,
yeah, costumes. Still not hot. It's not cold out by any means.
Like, people wear revealing costumes here, not just because they're exhibitionists, but because it's just too hot.
Because they can.
Yeah.
Blank. I just blanked again. I'm sorry. I'm drinking tea right now, and I will not be blank in a minute.
I see.
But, oh, no, I was going to say, if you want to see me in this costume, go to my Facebook wall.
it's somewhere?
It's in my photos, yeah.
Oh, funny, okay.
There's a photo of me in the costume with Brian and the Count Jocula and Kirsty wearing some kind of pajamas. I don't know. another friend of ours. Anyway, so.
I just remember there was a, you know, the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, they do a Treehouse of Horror comic book every year also. And they get different artists and writers to do, like, scary Simpson stories. And there was one where it was, you know, Halloween in Springfield, and the black guy who works at the nuclear power plant had to explain to the kids, I'm not Count Chocula.
Doesn't he have a name?
I don't know what it is.
Is that all he used to you? Is the black guy?
Well, because it's Carl and Lenny, and I don't know which is the white guy and which is the black guy, because they always exist as a team.
Oh, I see.
They don't have any individual identity. Stop trying to make me a racist, cracker.
Well, you're a Holocaust
denier. Oh, stop with that. Anyway, so Carl or Lenny, whichever the African-American one is telling kids, I'm not Count Chocula, I'm Blackula.
Okay, so horror movies. So,
yes.
It's the Silent Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Revelation.
I didn't have to go.
Yeah, you're lucky. I wish I could know in advance which horror movies were going to be good and which ones were going to be sucky so that I could take you to the good ones so that you wouldn't always be so anti-horror all the time. Like, I know that you
I can acknowledge a good horror movie. It's just not my first choice of the thing I want to see.
I know, but
I don't think horror movies are bad. I just don't like
them. When I know you what you do. Mm. When you get your list of upcoming releases, you farm out any horror that you possibly can to other writers. Because he's not just the film critic for therap.com. He's the one who decides who sees
that's
what.
That's not entirely true, because I can't farm out things that don't have press screenings. And well, more often than not, those are horror.
Silent Hill Revelation did not have a press screening. They invited us to the premiere to do red carpet.
Yeah, but not
to see
the movie.
And then not to let us in. Yeah, that was crazy.
Thanks.
And so, well, though they had a reason, because this movie is barf. And so,
go on.
It's the sequel to Silent Hill, which by comparison is a luxurious, you know, feat of cinema and budget and acting and, you know, special effects.
And it wasn't even in 3D.
No, this was in 3D. With the 3D. You know how much it cost me to go see this damn movie?
How much?
$17.75.
Oh, did you go to the EPX or whatever?
No, I went to the regular 3D screening.
Oh, huh, okay.
Regular, the first screening of the night, like Thursday night. Mm-hmm. They started screening it at 10 p.m.
Right.
And I went to the 10 p.m.
And we know how you love going to a 10 p.m. movie.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. Yeah. 10 p.m. No, I took a good long nap, so yes. I was good. And
Did you have a tea at the theater?
No, I had a Coke earlier in the evening.
Ah,
because I didn't want to, I didn't want to
leave and be all jittery.
I didn't want to have to get up and pee. I didn't want to go home and not be able to sleep. I knew I had to,
pace yourself.
Not that it mattered. The first film is Radha Mitchell, or Radha?
Radha,
whatever. Looking for her daughter, who was lost in Silent Hill. This time around,
that's what, the kids with no mouths or something?
There's a whole bunch of monster-y creatures and stuff. My favorite one, and the only one I really remember from the first one is the metal triangle head people. They're great. They're the ones I pointed out to you at Comic-Con, and you were like, "What's that?" And I said,
"Oh, right."
I said, "Silent Hill."
Yeah, I've never played the video game. I didn't see the movies.
I guess these games are really great. They make a lot of them, and I've never played the games, but people seem to really enjoy the games. Mm. These movies are boring, and this one is like this one. The first one I don't remember really having an amazing time at, but this one is nonsense. This one is like. The girl who plays, her name is Adelaide, I'm losing.
Oh, you said you didn't do the research.
Adelaide something. She's the girl in the movie, all grown up. She's Heather, Alessa, Sharon. Like, she's got three names based on her various, need for hiding or, running away from monsters and the Silent Hill religious cult. And
the Silent Hill gang.
The Silent Hill gang, exactly. The gag that couldn't shoot straight. It's like they she's looking for her dad this time around.
Uh-huh.
And he's stuck in Silent Hill. She's got to go in and get him. And at the beginning of the movie, it's really weird because they move to this new town because they're on the run. Mm-hmm. And she introduces herself to her new class. She's like, "You're not going to be my friend. I'm not going to be your friend. You don't want to know me. I don't want to know you. this place is stupid. I'm only here for a little bit. I'm always moving somewhere else. You don't need to know why. Let's just get along that way. Like, very sort of forthright, very, I know who I am, I know where I'm going, I know what my problem is, I know what I have to do. And then the movie
So she's River Phoenix and running on empty.
Basically. Yeah, and then the movie forgets that she is this sort of, like...
Forthright
girl, and the whole rest of the movie is her, like, wandering through the fog and the ash and the silent hillings and the... And running from things and... the best thing in the movie... This is the only reason to watch this movie on cable, fast-forwarded to this one part, where this six-legged spidery mannequin creature chases her, and it's got this mannequin head that opens up to another sort of like, it's got this skull thing that's a mannequin, and it opens up to another sort of head that's made of, like, meat.
And it's got, meat head.
And then it's got... this jutting out mouth snout that is going da, 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 in 3D at her, and you're like, ah. Other than that, there is no reason for this film to exist. It's cheaper than the last one. Mm-hmm. It looks cheaper than the last one. It's got that very sort of bright, crispy 3D digital feel to it, where the last one had this sort of like enveloping fog and ash and stuff, and you really felt the atmosphere of the first one, if nothing else. This one doesn't even have that.
Yeah.
It is an abject failure at being scary or interesting or logical or anything.
Well, they were talking
about this. Ta-da! And I told people this, and they were like, yeah, but I really like the video game, so I'm going to go see it anyway. And here's the thing about that.
Good. Buy two tickets.
Right, exactly.
One for your purse.
The thing about this is that I don't care if people go see something. I don't really feel like my job on this earth as a person who writes about films... is to convince anyone to go see or not go see something.
Uh-huh.
My job is to tell you the things I believe in my beautiful mind about this film and how it meets my own subjective standards of cinematic awesomeness.
Right.
And that is why, and it's good that I feel that way, because I could yell and yell and yell at you all day to go see Alps. It was a conversation we were having yesterday about seeing Alps, and the friends we were with were like, yeah, but that movie has no audience. And I said, oh, I'm not audience. And they were like, yeah, but that's nobody.
You are nothing.
Yeah. So as a consumer resource,
right?
Not
no,
good.
I know.
I'm no good.
I don't lose sleep over whether or not anyone's heeding my, you know, whatever. But... One of the other podcasts that I recommend every week is Podcast SVU with Allison Wilmore and Matt Singer. And this past episode, they were reviewing that documentary Indie Game.
Right.
And talking about the fact that there are just aren't any good movies based on video games. Like, they're terrible.
Not really.
And I don't know, even though, you know, video games obviously have gotten a lot more sophisticated and stuff over the years, there's something about the interactive narrative that doesn't loan itself to becoming an only one path narrative.
Right.
You know, I don't know the terminology here. But yeah, I mean, when you look at it, just think of all the crappy movies, you know, over the last couple of decades. I mean, dating back to what, Super Mario Brothers? Would that be the first one?
Well, there was Christmas Comes to Pac-Land.
That was a TV special.
I know, but still. And so, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll be touching on this again next week when we talk
Speaking
about...
Speaking of Christmas again. We talk, just keep go back to that.
Next week when we talk about Wreck-It Ralph, I'm sure we'll be touching on this again.
Do
but, yeah.
Watch Christmas Comes to Pac-Land when they show it
on
this
Cartoon
year,
Network. Because they will.
Yeah.
Yeah, which apparently was a special based on the Pac-Man TV show that I never saw, but... Judging from
I thought it was based on the Pac-Man breakfast cereal.
It's all in there somewhere. Yeah. No, there was a Pac-Man Saturday morning cartoon from which
I know.
From which the Christmas special spawned. And and I've never seen it, but having just from what I get from the special, I can tell I never.
What do you mean you've never seen it? We have it on tape. We've watched it.
I've never seen the show.
Oh, you've never seen the show. Okay.
Is it based on what I have seen in the special?
We have a VHS.
I don't feel like I'm missing anything
tape.
With the show.
Of Christmas Comes to Pac-Land.
So Silent Hill Revelation got released the weekend before Halloween, which for a horror movie is not much of a vote of confidence.
No, it's not.
Also not much
you
of a
You want to see something that'll creep you out. Sinister.
Right.
That's not a good movie, but it's but it's an effective movie, and it made me pretty happy and made me go at a couple moments, doesn't happen to me.
Now, what I was going to say was also not much of a vote of confidence is to release your Halloween comedy on the Friday before Halloween.
Yeah, why did they do that? Because this movie is not terrible.
Which brings us to Fun Size, which is pretty funny. Like, you know, it's...
If you're 12. I mean, admit this. Okay, admit it going in. You and I both put ourselves in the right mindset to watch this movie because we knew we should.
Although it's weird because...
There are very serious, airless kind of moments in this
True. Film. No. Yeah. I mean, it's not perfect. They're definitely, when they try to be serious, it doesn't work. Also, there's a really weird thing
The ending, when it got kind of heartfelt, I was sort of into that.
Oh.
I liked it when they were all with Mom, Chelsea Handler.
Yeah,
Mom.
I thought that's where it got a little thick.
It was okay. I'm feeling a little sentimental this week.
Well,
because it's Halloween.
You're allowed. It's that time of year where the magic is in the air. The thing about this movie also is that it really kind of it skews to a very narrow,
incredibly narrow niche market.
Because it's not suitable for little kids.
No, it's not.
It's a Nickelodeon movie, but there's
a whole lot of naughty.
Boob handling and
there's
things.
Naughtiness in this movie. It's rated PG-13.
Yeah. And an 8-year-old child gets into the cars of several strangers.
Yeah, and they comment on it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, this kid's in my car now. I'm not a child molester, everybody.
Anyway, Fun Size, it's set on Halloween night. It's Cleveland, and it's this group of high school kids. And the main girl, who's played by Victoria Justice
from the
Nickelodeon show Victorious, is supposed to be kind of a nerd, which is, of course, like completely
She's
ridiculous
a super beautiful girl
she's
who's...
Gorgeous.
Well, but she's a super beautiful girl. But I'll tell you, as written, she's convincing as
she
a nerdy
She does behave
girl.
Dorkily, yes.
She behaves dorkishly. She has books. Did you check the books that are on her desk? Apparently, she's reading Please Kill Me by Legs McNeil.
Oh, well then.
Yeah, the history of New York punk. And I really sort of appreciated that about her. I was like, oh, that's a fake thing that you're not reading. She wants to go to trick or treat as Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
And that she considers sexy Ruth Bader Ginsburg and abandons that.
And her friend, the nerd boy who's her friend, wants to go as
E.B. Lewis.
Yeah.
The entomologist and geneticist.
Father of sociology.
And one kid goes as Aaron Burr.
And they didn't know who he is. And he goes, I'm Aaron Burr, fool.
Anyway, so
those nerds who hang out on Halloween.
Yes. Yeah. So the main girl, Ren, is her name, and her friend is played by Jay Levy from Suburgatory, and they get invited to like the super popular Jake Ryan boys Halloween party, but because they lose track of Ren's not actually mute, but hasn't talked since their father died, younger brother, they spend Halloween running around.
Willfully silent.
Yes.
Yeah.
They spend Halloween night running around trying to find him with the help of Roosevelt, the nerdy guy who goes as the geneticist for Halloween, and who keeps talking about his moms, and then they get to his house and realize that he has two lesbian mothers, and Jay Levy says, I thought he was just talking like Lil Wayne. I did laugh a lot. I mean, the shifts in tone don't always work. It's definitely not appropriate for kids.
It's not for grown-ups either. It's for 12-year-olds who are experimenting with swearing and talk of boobies. Seriously, if you are in 7th grade, this is totally the movie for you. Because it's about high school kids, and it's this aspirational sort of thing where you're like, I'm going to have a great time just like that when I'm 17.
Right.
But if you're actually 17,
forget it.
You don't care about this
movie. But I think also if you're in your...
And if you're 7, mom and dad do not take them to see this movie.
But if you're in your 30s or your 40s and you're in the mood for something adventures in babysitting-ish.
Right, which is totally what it is.
This will scratch that itch. It's directed by Josh Schwartz, who created The OC and Gossip Girl and Chuck. And, it's negligible but entertaining.
Looks like it could have been made for ABC Family and fit right in there if they had just sort of toned it down a little bit.
Right.
Not unappealing at all, and kind of sweet. You know, there's this the ending where it gets a little sort of heartfelt about the mom, because the mom is played by Chelsea Handler, and you know, she kind of has a little subplot that sort of dovetails into the kids' plot.
Yeah, she's dating this much younger guy now.
Yeah, it has to do with the fact that their father passed away like a couple years earlier, and now the mom is dating this younger guy, and blah, 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 blah. But it becomes sort of like a sweet little family togetherness movie by the end, and I didn't think that was a problem at all either. I had a good time.
Yeah, I'm not against
this even movie. Like the Carly Rae Jepsen song over the credits.
I really like the
Carly. Yeah, I know you did. I saw you moving your head around like, yeah.
I didn't know what it was, you know. I was like, I don't know what this is, but I like it.
It's very bouncy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's,
you know,
this is a holiday that's all about candy.
We do not hate fun size.
No. Not at all.
And I mean, there's really nothing hateable about it.
No.
So did what did Matt and Gray say? They were sitting right in front of us.
Matt liked it. He admitted that he laughed through a lot of it. When we did it on What the Flick, I gave it a 7. He gave it a 6 just because as a parent, he was flipping out about the whole child endangerment stuff.
Yeah. Well, again, don't take your kid to see this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of not good messages there. I think Gray liked it. We haven't talked about it.
So what else we got here? Chasing Mavericks.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. So it's based on
I'm just going to make you talk about Wall of Plots this week.
Fine.
I don't feel like it. I'm feeling a little lazy. I've got pancakes I've got to make
All right. Chasing Mavericks is based
conserving my energy for the real important things of life.
Fine.
Making food.
This podcast, your listeners demand you make them a priority.
You know I'm down for every last one of you. But I don't like I don't like talking about the plots. I like that to be your job.
Well, I hate that part, but fine, I'll do it. Chasing Mavericks is based on a true story of surfer Jay Moriarty. We first meet him at age 8.
I'll tell you what it is. I'm interrupting you here. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that I think everyone who listens to this podcast needs to come in already knowing all the plots. Like, you should be aware.
Well, they don't always do that.
Well, so. I think it's... you know, they need to pull their weight. As listeners.
No, it is our job to inform them.
I just like to get right to the opinions.
Well, just look, you're making me do the Cloud Atlas plot later, and I'm going to need...
That's a whole lot of
I'm going to need flashcards and a map.
I'll do Chasing Mavericks because you're going to do Cloud Atlas.
Okay, fine.
And that's 6 plots.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so this kid named Jay Moriarty is, you know, fatherless. Everybody's fatherless in these movies.
It's like Disney cartoons.
Yeah, and... his dad ran away, abandoned him and his mom. And his mom's played by Elizabeth Shue. And the kid who plays Jay Moriarty, who was a real guy.
Yes.
Is a kid named Johnny Nelson.
Yeah. What is Wesson or Weston or something?
Johnny Wesson? Nesson? Something. Go get that information. Look it up, iPhone.
Just because I don't know the guy who sang the song from...
Played by Elizabeth Shue.
Brother.
And the guy across the street is Gerard Butler, who is a construction worker and also a surfing enthusiast. And so the kid...
Named Frosty.
Frosty. Well, that's the guy who's real. The guy. He was a consultant on the film.
No, I know. It's he's a real guy. Just every time somebody in the movie says, Frosty, I kept thinking, Happy Birthday!
So, the kid is obsessed... Johnny Weston. The kid is obsessed with surfing, but he's not good. And he begs Gerard Butler
teach
him.
That's not true.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Okay. Right. He learns how to surf from a friend.
Right.
But he's not good enough to do the thing he really wants to do, which is surf big waves. And so, he begs Gerard Butler to help him.
I mean, he's already like an award-winning young surfer. He's just not ready to take on these legendary
minor awards. 50-foot. Yeah. He's not a big deal on it by any stretch.
No.
And so he, with a lot of, hemming and hawing, and no, I don't want to do that because, you know, he's Frosty. Gerard Butler agrees, but only if it is really serious. Like,
because they've got 12 weeks.
And they've got 12 weeks until the season of these giant waves. And these waves are called Mavericks, and they're a real thing. And they're due to the geography and the timing of the swells and all this stuff. And they reach, 20, 25, 30 foot waves. And so they're not for beginners.
No.
So almost the entire rest of the movie is this training. And that's, I mean, that is the bulk of the film.
It is a lot of wax on, wax off.
Yeah. But here's the interesting thing. It's not an inspiring montage. It doesn't move in that Karate Kid rhythm or the Rocky sort
Ooh, of which rhythm. Elizabeth Shue is also in. Yeah, I just made that connection.
It moves slowly and deliberately through this process of this kid getting stronger and the bond between him and Gerard Butler becoming stronger. Now, Gerard Butler has a wife and two daughters, but he doesn't have a son. And you feel like that's something that he kind of yearns for, and he will never say that. But it's clear that the Jay kid really needs a dad and really looks up to Gerard Butler. So
Mrs. Frosty really kind of pushes him into it.
She does.
She says, look, this kid's going to do this anyway. You need to, like, you know,
make sure he doesn't get killed
exactly
trying to do it. So it's this very quiet movie about the process of two people coming together and loving each other. It's kind of a love story in a way between this surrogate father and son. And obviously it's a bio picture because this guy is, you know, it was a real guy. And it has a sort of, you know, climactic moment where he surfs the big wave. But then, and this is, someone said this earlier this week, and it's a quote from somewhere, but God writes terrible theater. I don't remember who said this. But what you learn, and this is not a big spoiler because all you have to do is go look it up on the internet. Jay Moriarty died
at a very young age, five years later.
He died at the age of 22.
Free diving.
Drowning. Yeah, he drowned. Yeah. And which is a very sort of bummery coda to the film. But also, it lends the movie this quality of, you know, well, okay, so you've only got 22 years of life. What are you going to do with it? You know, you're going to learn to do this amazing thing? Are you going to forge bonds with people? Are you going to, you know, really, really, like, commit yourself to this thing? Because what I really appreciate is that they showed him actually sacrificing teenage normalcy for this goal. And, like, all the other kids are like, we're going to go party. And he's like, I have to go to bed. I have to be up at 4:30 in the morning to go surfing. And the other kids were, you know, we're going to go out drinking. And he's like, I can't do that. I have to stay in shape. And so I really sort of thought the movie was really interesting in the way it handled those details. And I found it, and I know you disagree with me heartily, so I'm going to let you say what you got to say when I'm done. But I found this to be a very sort of, like, unusual film, slow moving, slowly paced, not super excited or concerned with major, you know, cathartic peaks or anything, or fakey bad stuff to make you feel even more horrible, even though bad things do happen, and they really happened, so there's nothing you can do about that. And so because you're making a face at me right now while I'm telling you.
Because I can't believe you got this out of this stupid movie, but go ahead.
I found it to be very moving and not stupid, and, you know, it's not the most amazingly cinematic thing I've ever seen. You want that? There's a great documentary called Step Into Liquid that will blow your mind with surfing. Like, surfing's the kind of thing that I've never done because I would immediately die if I did it. And so I know that about myself. But I've always thought surfers were amazing, and they're amazing to watch. And surfing documentaries, if one comes out, I'm always excited to see it. Because even if it's only half well shot, it's going to still look great. But yeah, if you want cinema, then go see, you know, rent Endless Summer or Step Into Liquid.
Or Riding Giant.
This is just a really, really, you know, gentle human story. And I am I'm not looking forward to that Gerard Butler Christmas romantic comedy that's coming out. I feel bad for him about that, whatever it's called. I don't even want to see it.
Playing for keeps.
Yeah, no thanks. But this, I feel like this was a decent choice for him. I went into it thinking, oh, God, it's going to be terrible. Because you came home from the press screening saying, oh, it's terrible. But you're
and
wrong.
I was right.
No, you are wrong. No, it is not terrible. It is heartfelt and not in a gross way. Go.
Okay. Remember a couple years ago there was that biopic about Notorious B.I.G.?
Yes.
And how, like, everything he did was so awesome and perfect all the time. And even the bad things he did, you wind up finding out later in the movie, had a good, like, effect. Like every single... like
all those drug deals.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the time that he pushed that girl in front of a car, it stopped that car from killing a bunch more people. I mean, it was that stupid in terms of, like they backtrack and make every action that happens in the movie something good.
Yes.
Okay, so Jay...
Keep talking.
So Jay Moriarty is dead, and apparently is this legend among surfers.
Yes.
And so this movie portrays him to be such a paragon of niceness and wonderfulness that he's a big honking bore. Like, I never cared
about
this
guy. I'm going to agree with you a little bit about the performance by this kid. It's a little bland.
He is, you know, crowned by his little halo of blonde
curls. Christopher Atkins head.
Yeah, you know, and he's just so awesome to everybody. And he's got the friend who's got some sort of, is it drugs? We don't really know what it is.
That kid is using and selling drugs.
He just seems to stand by a lot of cars. You know what? We don't really know what it is.
That kid needs an upstanding
roofer across the street.
That kid, no. The drug kid needed Jay, who was a golden gram of a human being, to stand by him and not judge him,
okay,
and help him to not do drugs.
So yeah, so you, in the middle of this movie, you have, and I didn't know until the end that the guy was dead. But when I found out, I was like, oh well, of course. No wonder this movie has been such a hagiography. So you got that. You've got like character stuff that comes out of nowhere. Like the whole movie, Elizabeth Shue is like drunk and unreliable, and he's clearly taking care of the household and doing the laundry and getting her out of bed and going to work on time and blah blah blah.
Yes.
And then one day, she isn't. Suddenly, on his birthday, she is up and at him and fresh and clear eyed and boom, and it's never discussed.
She had a revelation.
It is just like
again.
His golden perfection.
He helped her.
Bled out into her.
He took care of her until she realized that she had to listen.
This movie is bogus. And, you know,
I don't care. I don't care.
The surfing footage is pretty spectacular, I will grant you. But and all the training stuff is just so much of it feels so cliched. And it's all like everything that he learns that's a lesson about the surf is also a lesson about life.
Isn't it interesting how those two things go together?
This movie drove me up the wall. And then I was what I was stunned to discover at the end of the movie, A, that this kid is dead, and then B, it was directed by Curtis Hanson and Michael Apted. Apparently Curtis Hanson was making this movie and got sick, and Michael Apted came in for like the last couple of weeks of shooting. And like,
and I think that's why it feels
so... Both
these
guys are way too smart for this stupid
movie. I feel it feels very sort of restrained and doesn't go down typical paths. And I know that there's some... Yes, there's some unreality in terms of like people's response to this, you know, beautiful child, but overlookable.
This movie bugged me. It started bugging me early on and kept bugging me the whole time. So you're crazy and I'm right.
You have a pitch black lump of tar.
Really?
For a heart, yeah.
Says the guy who listens to Burzum.
That's inspirational music.
Yes. Okay, then. All right. Everybody stand back.
Here comes the Cloud Atlas.
Here comes Cloud Atlas. And trying to explain the plot of this movie. Okay. We have six intertwining stories. One of them is set on a slave ship in the 18th century.
Slavery's bad.
One is set in the 1930s, and it's about a gay composer and the older composer who tries to steal his work.
It's bad to steal.
Then there's the 1970s, where an investigative reporter is chasing down shady doings at a nuclear power plant.
It's bad to be shady.
Then, in the current day, a publisher has to escape the nursing home that he has accidentally committed himself to.
It's bad to be a nursing home.
Then, am I forgetting one?
Future waitress.
Future waitress who starts a revolution.
And future caveman.
And then future caveman. Yeah, that's all six. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, there's a you whole
talk about future waitress and future.
Okay,
future sorry. Caveman.
Yeah, okay. Future.
Don't short shrift sorry. People.
Future waitress discovers that Soylent Green is people, and that she and all the.
I can't believe you just gave that away.
Future waitress discovers that she is like a clone or something, and then winds up like becoming this big. Are you serious? I was kidding. That's not actually what happens.
We'll discuss this later.
All right, fine.
But what does future waitress do?
All right, I'll cut that part.
What's the thing? You don't have to cut it, but what's the future waitress? What does she do?
Future waitress fights.
Keep telling people.
Future waitress fights the power.
Yes.
And then post-apocalyptic caveman pigeon gibberish Tom Hanks helps super future
Halle Berry
up a mountain. And Hugo Weaving is always the bad guy.
Or the bad girl. In fact, everybody is a guy or a girl or both at the same time in this film.
Our friend David Zeev asked me if I objected to the yellow face that they put the white actors in the future waitress segment. And I said, well, I think any movie where Halle Berry plays a German Jew, all bets are off.
Right. Exactly. Every major actor in this film plays a different gender, a different race, you know.
Many different ages,
all different eras. Like, so the moving back and forth between race and sex in this film is just sort of, he cast whoever he cast. Like, the races of the people in the film don't necessarily matter all that much.
There are scenes in which their race corresponds to their actual one, and then ones where they don't.
Where they don't. In fact, almost none of them do, except for Keith David. You cannot disguise Keith David as anything other than Keith David.
I suppose.
And so, like, Halle Berry can be cast as a German Jew, and you can make her up enough.
Right.
So that it looks like that might be real.
And
she's a white guy in one scene where like the little microscope thing on his face.
Oh right, and then, yeah. And who's the Korean actress Boon
Doona Bai
becomes a freckled red haired woman.
Yeah, so everything is shifting and changing, and it's one of the themes of the film, the idea of transcending boundaries and crossing them and forcing yourself across them, you know, to push through. To what you need to do with the world and the universe and history and
your soul.
And your soul, and yeah, and everything is connected, and all the stories interlock or overlap, and the things that happen in the past reverberate through the future so that people in the future will experience something that was produced in the past in another story and say, oh, that, I was there for that somehow. But I don't know how, because I'm in the present and that was the past, and we all know that there's no such thing as reincarnation soul transcendence.
It's
and
transcendentalism for dummies.
It is a it's a trippy movie for people who don't ever think about things.
This is the movie for you.
And
if you never think about things.
I loved it so much. I felt like I think it was Mark, our friend Mark. That was just on the show a couple weeks ago, who said, you know, you either swallow it whole or you don't. Oops, sorry, just banged my mic. I was being emphatic. You either swallow it whole or you don't. And there's really not much of a middle ground.
I disagree, actually, because I'm glad I saw it. I was entertained by it. I think that people should see it. But I also kind of think it's a crock, and I don't think that it has the emotional payoff that it should have. that you can feel the movie feeling like it's having. All that said, though, even though I think it's flawed, it is so ambitious and so fascinating and casts its nets out in so many directions that people should totally check it out.
There is a sense of, what's the right word? I can feel the movie experiencing its own joy over like the reach that it's making. You know, this sort of like, look what I'm doing. You know, the like Matt was saying the other day, when it swings for the bleachers, and it is always swinging for the bleachers.
Yeah,
there's no holding back. There's no second guessing the action. If someone looks goofy in the rubber nose, then they look goofy in the rubber nose, and that's just the way it's supposed to be. And if the people escaping from the nursing home turns into a Benny Hill sketch, then so what? And if the slavery story becomes like wildly crazy and improbable, then so be it. Yeah. And you know,
we're doing it live.
Future cave people talk like Jar Jar Binks, and you can't understand a thing they are saying through a good chunk of the movie. Doesn't matter.
I can actually understand what they were saying. Right? I mean,
I gave up trying to figure out what they were saying.
It was kind of preciously overdone, but I did understand the patois.
It's the kind of film that is sort of exuberantly what it is. It is reaching high and wanting
to give compromising you in any
a
way.
Spectacle to look at and a very easy thing to think about.
Yes.
And you could say that at 3 hours, it's constantly overstating and saying the same thing over and over again. And it is. But for me, the cumulative effect of all of these stories sort of like building to this thing where all of them are reaching a kind of crescendo.
Right.
Even if they're ridiculous crescendos. It made me feel like I had been a part of a very personal story, even though there was nothing really personal about it. And I cannot, and I know this is reductive, but I cannot separate this film from Lana Wachowski. I just can't. After seeing her give her speech to the HRC about what it means to have grown up transgender,
mm-hmm.
this feels like a manifesto of a movie where the idea of one or the other isn't even on the table. The idea of everything being fluid and everything being an infinite variety of life experiences and ways of seeing and modes of being, where there's no such thing as, well, pick that one or that one, because that would be a short, boring movie.
Right.
This is a movie about the infinite possibilities of everything. And so when she says in that speech, you know, I don't want people to look at me like, oh, he was a guy and became, I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. you know, he was a guy and now he's a girl. She goes, that means that I'm part of a binary system that I don't even believe in.
Right.
And that's this film. This film is, in a very weird, freaky, sort of overblown way, a coming out movie. And I felt this sense of joy when it was over and contentment on the part of not just the movie, but the people who made it. And if that's reductive, so what? It's reductive. I'm into it. It's not great. But it's great.
I enjoyed watching it. I'm glad I saw it. But again, when you talk about the crescendo at the end, for me, it's sort of like if you see a conductor sort of sweep his hand up in the air and all you hear is... like, you know, like there's not that big thing, you know, at the end that I was expecting, that I thought, well, clearly we're building up to this thing. And then it happens. It's like somebody
on one of those little school recorders, you know, like that.
Yeah. So that's my main beef with this movie. But I'm not all or nothing here. I think a lot of it is terrific. I admire the just sort of like crazy, you know, without a netness of it, you know.
I love that there's those Speed Racer colors came back in for future Korea. Oh, do I love Speed Racer so much.
There's been a whole revisionist thing now of people coming forward like, I love Speed Racer. You know?
Well, I loved it from the get-go.
Yeah, I know.
I was never a revisionist. I was boldly pro-Speed Racer at the time of Speed Racer.
Closeted Speed Racer fans are feeling emboldened to come out more about it.
That movie
is crap.
There was never a closet for me. Speed Racer! All the way.
Junk.
I've never read the book that this is based on. I don't know anyone who has. I don't know how they feel about it.
Our friend Jason did. But did he? He had not seen the movie yet when he mentioned that.
I don't know how they'll feel about it. But again, apparently it's one of those, like, how did they even make this into a movie?
Right, yeah, I can see that.
And that's... I like those kind of books being made in the films because... They fly in the face of conventional wisdom of how to adapt a book.
Or how to make a movie.
The idea of, if you're going to adapt a book into a film, there's this idea that you must be faithful.
Yeah.
And that the readers of the book are going to crucify you if you don't. And I really love the idea of taking a book and making this entire other thing.
Sure.
That is sort of a companion to the book, but isn't just a slavish recreation. In the book What Is Cinema by Andre Bazin.
Yes.
There's an essay where the French novelist Georges Bernanos, who wrote Under the Son of Satan and Diary of a Country Priest, was talking about the film adaptation and how he wanted the film adaptation to...
Of Country Priest.
Yeah, to dream his story over.
Interesting.
And I love that expression. I love that idea of taking a thing and reimagining it. And of course, because he was a great novelist, he expressed it in this beautiful way.
The example that I always cite as sort of the how you do this and how you don't do this, the two John Irving novels that got brought to the screen in the 1980s, you had World According to Garp, which was great, and it doesn't slavishly follow all the events of the book. They don't go to Vienna, you know, there's all these things. But they capture the spirit of the book and what the book is about and what it means and how it's told and the sense of humor, all that stuff, without slavishly copying everything. Then you have Tony Richardson's adaptation of The Hotel in New Hampshire, which slavishly follows the book and doesn't get the tone right at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know I'm with you. Our friend Mr. Kroenke was saying on my Facebook page that you know that I should read the book and compare the two and blah 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 in my review. And I responded. I said I've gotten to the point where I try to avoid reading the book now if I know it's going to be a movie, because I think the movie needs to exist on its own as its own singular piece of art, and that I need to be able to evaluate it with a blank slate, not going in pre-armed with what the book tells me. Because a lot of times, you know...
I like to go into the blank brain.
Well, there you go. But, you know, like, a lot of times in adaptations, like, for, you know, like, this is a dumb example, but in The Love Machine, for example...
What's dumb about that example?
They keep...
That movie's stupid.
They keep the thing where Robin Stone...
Like, and completely great.
Where Robin Stone like insists that this girl spend the night with him, that like that nobody who has sex with him gets to leave, you know, in the middle of the night. Like, they have to spend the night, you know, to the point where he punches her in the face. And in the book,
because that'll make you want to stay.
Yeah, it was the 70s.
He hit me, and it felt like a kiss.
It was a more innocent time, but you know, but in the book, they actually explain what that's about and what that character, you know, thing is about. And in the movie, it's never mentioned again.
No.
They just kept that in, you know.
Face punch.
Yeah. So, I think there's a trap where, you know, and especially when you get into stuff like Harry Potter or Twilight, where you've got this super devoted fan base and they want every comma to be on the screen, you know, I think
the words you're looking for are jot and tittle.
That too.
Yeah.
Do you know what a jot and tittle are?
I don't care.
A jot is the dot on the J, and a tittle is the cross of the T.
I did know that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Andre Bazin.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think, definitely people who adapt novels need to have the flexibility to dream it onto the screen. I like that expression a lot. To dream it over.
Yeah.
A couple of things I want to mention real quick. the Outfest Downtown 30 series that I have been curating, coming back on Wednesday, November 14th. We are doing a 30th anniversary screening of Victor Victoria, and Leslie Ann Warren is going to be there. And I'm very excited about that. She's going to be great. So please come to that.
Do. November 14th. Do it.
You can, and you can pre-order tickets at brownpapertickets.com if you're in Los Angeles. Also, in LA this week, out at the NoHo 7, the Lemley NoHo 7, is Gaby, which is a very funny comedy directed by my friend Jonathan Lasecki, who also wrote it. He's also in it. It's a very funny comedy about a gay man and his straight female best friend who decide to have a baby together the old-fashioned way. Very funny movie, very well written. I was talking to Robert about it, who reviewed it for the LA Times and liked it, and he said that it's like Girls on HBO, and that it really captures the way certain kind of urbanites talk. You know, it's a really entertaining movie. You should check it out. And it'll be on DVD later this year.
Yep.
Has we letters?
Quickly, let's do DVD recs and then letters, and then we got to get done.
Okay.
We have like 5 minutes.
Okay. Okay. My DVD recommendation is Sunday Bloody Sunday, the John Schlesinger classic with Glenda Jackson and Peter Finch and Murray Head, which has been released in a really beautiful collection by the Criterion. Has some great essays and extras and stuff, and it's a beautiful Blu-ray and one of my favorite movies. It's one of my 101 must-see movies for gay men.
Magic Mike comes out on DVD this week, and you and I disagreed on Magic Mike.
We sure
and
did.
I think it's a really, really interesting film about the desperation of people in this economic climate. And it has very little... My recommendation of this film has very little to do with the stripping, because I don't think the movie is all that concerned with the stripping. I think it exists in the film. It is something to look at in the film, but it is not the point of the film. The movie is about a whole bunch of other things besides that, and effectively.
I agree with you up until the effectively part. But yes, other than that, you're right. This is more a movie about economic desperation than it is about shaking your moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
All right, letters.
Hey, DNA. For some reason, you never read...
Who's this from?
James. This is from James. For some reason, you never read my list that I sent in July. Look, maybe I just deleted it. I don't know what I did with everything. So I'm sending it again. I'm purposefully excluding the obvious three that end up on most lists. Citizen Kane, Gone with the Wind, and Casablanca. Rate me linoleum, because I'm sure my titles are edgy enough to be rated knife.
What?
Oh, they're not edgy enough to be rated knife. The Lion in Winter.
Sure, great.
Two for the Road.
Love it!
Which we both are super into. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Awesome.
Which is good. Body Heat.
Great.
All About Eve.
Love it.
The Graduate, which you're not into,
I'm
right?
I'm not the biggest fan of but I understand why people love it. So.
The Nun's Story.
Oh, okay. Audrey Hepburn.
I've never seen it.
It's worth seeing. She's really good. Peter Finch is in it.
Who directed it?
Fred Zinnemann.
Mm. Rear Window.
Great.
Black Narcissus.
Oh, gorgeous.
Somebody likes nuns. What's that about,
and
man?
And Audrey Hepburn.
To Kill a Mockingbird,
mm-hmm.
Which is a wonderful movie. Hopefully you won't be too harsh on my picks. Oh, and because others have extended their lists, listen.
Top 10, people.
Done with you people and your extended lists.
Kill your babies. Make the hard cut choices.
Petulia.
Oh, love it.
Duck Soup.
Yes.
Goldfinger.
Mm.
Sunrise. Dr. Zhivago.
I'm leaving you for this guy.
The damn you am.
You are 100% linoleum.
You are. You are all linoleum to us, James. Here's a follow-up from Dynamoxy. Yay, you got my list. I wanted to say that I actually own Lost Angels on VHS. I get very frustrated with Netflix, and I'm a really big Beastie Boys fan, for certain weird deviations in their careers, apparently. For example, my favorite thing about them, really, is that Ad-Rock married Kathleen Hanna. Anyway, then she goes on about the Beastie Boys shows that she has seen. Okay, here's another one. Hey guys, love the show, very funny, and my girlfriend and I listen to it every day. How is that? How do you listen to it every day?
We've been doing this thing for almost 2 years.
This is from Matt, by the way.
There's reruns.
Thank you, Matt. His top 10 favorite movies are Fearless.
Which I've still never seen, actually. Yeah, I know, you and Planes.
I have to go see Flight Tuesday night.
I know.
So do you.
I will hold your
hand. I've seen the trailer where the plane is flying upside down. I shouldn't have to go see this movie.
I'll be there.
I should not have to go see
this movie. I'll be there for you the way I was there for you for United 95. Or
99.
93. Or 93, whatever.
God. Stop making plane crash movies unless Helen Reddy is the nun. And Karen Black is flying the plane.
Now,
and then they crash into the Bermuda Triangle. And then Charo is on the plane. Those are the only airplane movies of terror I want to watch.
Now, can you evaluate Fearless? Is it a good movie?
It was a blur of anxiety.
Okay.
The whole thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Good night and good luck.
Sure.
Touch of Evil.
Nice.
Citizen Kane.
Great.
American Beauty.
Yeah.
We don't like it.
No.
Ordinary People. We totally like Ordinary People.
Give her the GD camera. Clean podcast.
It's French toast. I made your favorite. All right, if you don't want it.
Christmas in London, like something out of Dickens.
There was a local band put out they were doing a show.
Local, you know, LA or Dallas?
Local LA band doing a show, and I saw their flyer. And it was a still, you know, it was cut and paste flyers for the show. It is a still from Ordinary People of them sitting on the Mary Tyler Moore and Timothy Hutton sitting on the pool furniture,
uh-huh.
And it's November, so they're all wrapped up.
Yeah.
And there's these word bubbles above their heads. Timothy Hutton's word bubble is, "I should have died in that boating accident instead of my brother." And then the word bubble above her head is, "You should have died in that boating accident instead of your brother."
I love her meltdown on the golf course.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best.
I want to watch that movie.
I know. Yeah. Oh, God, it's been a while. Ordinary People, so good.
L.A. Confidential.
Great.
Margin Call, which is really good. Yeah. The Dark Knight.
Not to be confused with Marwan Call. Dark Knight, yes, great.
And Brazil.
Awesome.
So, you know, we're going to give you the 90% because we think American Beauty sucks it.
Yes. And beyond that, though, lovely.
Everything else is cool. All right, next one. We gotta hurry. Hi, Alonzo and Dave. I live for your podcast.
No, that's not true.
That's how it should
that's
be.
Sweet.
All of y'all should be living.
I'm living for this,
and I can't wait to listen every Monday morning. Here are my top 10 movies. They may not be go-tos on a bored Thursday night, but they hold deep importance for me, as they managed to shift various paradigms I held dear.
Ooh,
this is from Tucker.
Tucker is a grad student.
Thank you, Tucker. All right, Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
My mom made me watch this movie when I was 12.
Wow.
And I thought it was crazy. And I thought she was crazy. Number two, the Beaver Trilogy.
Right. Yes.
Now, probably most of y'all don't know what that is. I'm just going to read you a little bit from the wiki page.
Was it Groovin Gary? Is that his name?
It's a documentary directed by Trent Harris featuring Groovin Gary, Sean Penn, Crispin Glover, co-starring Courtney Gaines and Elizabeth Daly. The Beaver Trilogy combines three separate vignettes that were filmed at different times in 79, 81, and 85. The first, entitled The Beaver Kid, is a short documentary about the exploits of Groovin Gary, a performer that the filmmaker Harris happened upon while filming for a Salt Lake City, Utah news station. The second installment, called The Beaver Kid 2, features Sean Penn as Groovin' Larry Huff in a dramatic interpretation of the original documentary. It incorporated some scenes from the original documentary. The Beaver Kid 2 was shot on a budget of $100.
Wow.
The trilogy is completed with The Orkley Kid, in which Crispin Glover reprises Penn's role, this time referring to his onstage persona as Olivia Neutron Bomb. So, yes, if anyone out there gets a chance to see the Beaver Trilogy, see the Beaver Trilogy.
I have to say, one of my great moments in pop culture is that I gave a copy of the Beaver Trilogy to Olivia Newton-John.
I remember when you did that. Because you met her for an interview one time.
Yes. Yeah. You're welcome, America.
Akira.
Mm-hmm.
Paris is burning.
Yes.
Female Trouble.
Okay.
Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
The Wiz. Look. Yeah. I'm into it. Sure. Sick. The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan's Super Masochist.
Woo! My DVD pick from last week.
Yep. Grey Gardens.
Yes.
Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Yes.
100%,
100%
dude.
Knife.
That's maybe one of the most 100%est.
That is the knifiest list in a
while.
That might
be one of the knifiest lists we've had.
Kudos.
So, yeah, you're above the knife level, I think, on this.
You're cutting edge.
This is some real stuff right here.
It had a jagged edge, like a hunting knife.
Okay, that's all we have time for this week. But we're almost halfway through the October. We are catching the up.
Nice.
In a way that we're about to get to a place where we have...
As we go.
Yeah.
We should do James's Halloween list.
Oh, yeah, James's Halloween list. Hang on. One more.
It's now or never.
One more, yeah.
James in London.
James in London. Not the other James that we just read the list by. Here we go. Dawn of the Dead.
Either one, sure.
Yeah. The original.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
The Exorcist. The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Videodrome.
Mm-hmm.
Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Peeping Tom.
Yeah.
Bride of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Videodrome. Twice. He put Videodrome on twice. Thanks, James from London. Proofread your lists.
You are 100% knife with an asterisk on that one. We will substitute the second Videodrome with another Cronenberg title.
Okay, so I'm done talking except to recommend a new podcast that I started listening to last night for the first time called The Conversation. And it's a contemporary art podcast, and I'm a big contemporary art fan, and I know maybe one or two of you out there probably are too. I understand that this is a hermetically sealed niche market subject.
I will not be listening to this podcast, but I'm sure it's great.
I'm suddenly into this. I'm going to listen to all of them.
So okay.
Find it if you're into that kind of thing.
Also, you can look for The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, as previously mentioned, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with that Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, and we would love it if you would leave us a review there. It helps other people find the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our page on Facebook. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter. Check into the show on Get Glue and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions, comments, top 10 lists, whatever. We want to hear from you. And
Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yes, if you would like an autographed copy of my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, or
it's
several
cost
of them,
you some money.
Drop me a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and I'll give you all the info you need. Anyway, we thank you so much for listening. Next week, it's November. It's getting crazy up in here. All these new movies, tons and tons of awardsy stuff, and the latest from Disney animation. So it's going to be exciting. You don't want to miss it.
You, yes.
We'll see
no
you.
Missing.
We will catch you next time.
Goodbye.